The Black Talk Radio Network is made possible in part with help from the Black Talk Media Project, a North Carolina-based nonprofit engaged in the production and distribution of independent digital black media. Find out more by going to blacktalkradionetwork.com or blacktalkmediaproject.org and look for the menu tab, Crowdfunding Black Media. Black Talk Media Project, helping to provide you with new black media for the new millennium. Opinions expressed by callers, guests, and hosts do not necessarily reflect those of the Black Talk Radio Network and Black Talk Media Project. Black Talk Radio is new black media for the new millennium. Afternoon, at least I hope you're having a good afternoon as we come at you over these airways from behind the enemy lines of USA Inc. Today's date is August the 19th, 2016. It is a Friday afternoon. Been a very busy week for me. I don't know how the week has been for you. I hope it has been productive, and obviously you survived another week behind enemy lines, so congratulations to you. Today will be just an open forum, open lines. We'll go to the phone lines if you have any news to report from anywhere on the planet that you may be listening to Black Talk Radio. Today, just going to go through the news feeds in the new BTR community. I'm still learning the front end of it, as most of my time has been spent dealing with stuff and implementing things behind the scenes, working in the administrator's area so that everything on the front end works properly like it's supposed to work. So I'm still discovering all the different features of our new social media community. Again, that's BTR community, a new online black social experience. Put out a commercial last night or early this morning as I was up to about 4 a.m. By the time I was able to lay down and get some rest, because a lot of times when you're dealing with looking at code and dealing with applications and extensions and things, man, that can become time consuming, and before you know it, it's been like 2 hours, 3 hours. But before I went to sleep, I had to put out this video. It's called Harriet Hates Anti-Blackness on Social Media. Now, one of the new things I'm learning about the BTR community is that once you are logged in, right under where it says on the front page, say what's on your mind, you know, for the members. All right, so there's a little bar under it that says filtered, and it usually says filtered by status, but you can filter your stream, customize it by status, updates, videos, events, groups, whatever you want to see first on your mainstream or, yeah, on the front page. So I just click on all streams. That way I can see all of the user posted content. Again, a lot of content is for site members, has been marked site members only. Some of it's viewable to the public, but I've created this video. And I know, you know, I've been studying media for a very long time. I mean, intensely, because I discovered its importance in as a weapon of warfare and just a tool of racism and white supremacists. So they put in what we call, you know, coded messages and subliminal messages. And I have my own subliminal message. So this is really like an animated commercial. It's only about 52 seconds long, but it's called Harriet Hates Anti-Blackness on social media. So it's been uploaded to our YouTube account, to our Facebook account as well, for BTR community. And so the reason that I chose the name Harriet is because she's like named after Harriet Tubman, the black woman who's a character is Harriet Tubman. And she's trying to free people from that matrix called Facebook and get away from all that anti-blackness that we see pop up on there. So, but I bet you a lot of people won't make that connection. But some people will, that Harriet, hey, she's like Harriet Tubman trying to free enslaved Africans from the grips of white supremacists, from the grips of white supremacists. All right, so hope you had a chance to check that out. I will be going through some of the news feeds because there's stuff happening every day, a lot of important stuff happening, not only here in the United States behind these enemy lines, but again, I feel that the war is global. It is global. All the evidence points to a global system of white supremacy. Let's go ahead and take our first caller during this open line session, calling us on the studio line, area code 917. Thank you for chiming in. What's on your mind? Yes, area code 917. You're calling into a radio station? Okay. Guess they didn't have much to say. Let me check the conference line. Let me give out those telephone numbers again. The conference line is 641-715-3660. The participant code is 549-032 pound. Hit star 6 and 1 if you'd like to comment on air. The studio line is 704-951-5030. A lot of times people get that mixed up with our business line with for the Black Talk Media Project, and it's totally different. That this 704-951-5030 is only for the radio program studio line. All right, so let's go to the conference line. We have a caller, 414 area code. That's, I believe, Milwaukee. Thanks for calling in. What's on your mind?
Can you hear me?
Yes. What's going on, Rob?
Hey, how you doing today, Brother Scotty?
Just busy as ever, man, and, you know, that's good. But, yeah, what's on your mind today? Go ahead. The mic is yours. Okay, Rob, it seems like you're having some issue with your audio. I'm going to leave your mic open, but I'm going to go to this other caller as you work to resolve that.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you now. Yeah.
Okay, I'm sorry about that. I had muted myself. I have wanted to touch on a story from yesterday about the, lady named Mother Jones. You talked about the end of the use of the private prisons.
Yes. You're talking about the assistant attorney general to Loretta Lynch. I can't recall the white woman's name.
Okay. I was listening to that. I didn't get a chance to chime in, so I just wanted to touch on that a little bit. Now, the question that I wanted to ask you is why, what's the significance in the end of the use of the private prisons, in your opinion?
If we're talking about in the context of what the Justice Department said, it's significant just in them saying that they are going to stop. But like we pointed out during that program, was to stop the next group of white supremacists or proxy racist tools to get in there and then re-implement or reinstate all these contracts. But I got another story, an update to that story today that I'll share later. It's also posted, I think we posted in the abolitionist group. But the significance of it is that it shows that that outside forces, I would say grassroots forces, are able to utilize media, able to utilize, organizing in the street, which really is just to get the attention of media and putting pressure on USA Inc. to make changes in policy. Now, that's only going to, if they end it, the federal private contracts, that's only about 12% up to 16% in the two largest companies. So that's still just a significant small amount of people, but anybody that we can prevent becoming slaves is good. But still, though, there's a whole lot of other people still affected by it.
Yeah, and the reason that I asked, because I did time in a private prison, and like millions of other people, and I don't know how I feel about the report coming out saying like, oh, you know, we're not going to do it anymore. But I feel like, well, what about me and the millions of other people that
let me chime in right quick. Okay. In that report, it did document the reason that they said they weren't going to renew these contracts is because they were not safe. Basically, they were not safe. They were poorly maintained and a whole host of other critiques and what have you. So they were saying they're not saving us any money. They're not, treating the slaves well. A lot of mistreatment of slaves going on and what have you. So we're going to end that contract. Now, so that's the United States government, USA Inc., the executive branch, acknowledging that people suffered in those prisons. So I would say possibly, I'm not an attorney, but maybe it's worth looking into class action lawsuits for any formerly enslaved person who suffered in those facilities. Rob, did you have any other commentary? Okay, looks like we lost Rob. He might be having some phone issues. Eric Cole, 251, you're on Black Talk Radio News on the Black Talk Radio Network. Go ahead with your question or comment.
Peace, Bro Scotty. This is Ty that was calling to see if you were looking to reschedule that interview around the film festival.
Yeah, this is Tag, audience, ladies and gentlemen that are listening. He is a student in New York City and an intern for the Black Talk Media Project, and we had talked about scheduling an interview today, but I didn't catch a email, but I'm ready if they want to come on today or if they want to reschedule it, but certainly would look forward to talking to other media producers and get their perspectives on the system of racism and white supremacy, and of course hearing from you about anything and any questions that you may have. So it's up to you, Tag, how you want to do it. Are they confirmed for today or they need to reschedule?
Yes. So I'm wondering if the 917 caller to the studio line might have been, one of the potential interviewees.
I answered that 917, but they hung up. The 917 hung up.
Yeah, I'm not sure why that is, but I sent out a couple of emails, so I'm sorry to hear that you didn't receive those, with respect to today. To my knowledge, they were confirmed for today, so maybe that was one of them, or maybe not. Maybe they're still looking to call in. I'm really either way. It sounds like you have things, lined up for today
is like open lines.
Call in, I'm happy to.
Yeah, now I'm seeing your email from 3:20. You sent about 3:30. Let's see, Tanisha and Fine are slated to call in around 4:15. So that will be right about now. 4:15, 4:20. 4:15, 4:20. So again, these are Tag, and again, Tag. Really, I'm gonna let you. conduct an interview, and I'm going to chime in with some questions, but certainly we're waiting on that. So the studio line is open. The studio line is open. I don't know what happened with 414. I think we lost. I don't know if you had phone issues, but as we wait on these callers to call in, please go ahead and with the rest of your comments that you asked.
Yeah, I don't know what happened. I got cut off. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir. We can hear you.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, so I think the last thing I heard you were saying was that the government acknowledging that the slaves were suffering inside the CCA prisons or the private prisons or whatever. I was in a CCA prison, mm-hmm. In Appleton, Minnesota. And I feel two different ways about it, because while they shipped me, the bus ride and all of that was, you know, bizarre. And just getting to the prison was really rough. And it was very, you know, as far away from my family. It was almost like in one of the Dakota states, either North Dakota or South Dakota, that we was very close to instead of Minnesota. We was like right on the border. So it was really far for my family to get out there to, you know, come and see me. But serving, as far as serving time, you know, the time went a lot smoother, you know, out there. You know, mentally speaking, I don't know if I'd have made it if I stayed here. I don't know.
Right. 917, if you could hold, you just called into the station. We have one of the listeners who's speaking. So 917, if you could hold just a moment, and we do have Tag on the line. I'll tell you what, 414, we'll revisit this after our interview with these filmmakers and media, black media producers. So if you want to chime back in later, just hit 414, because I have an update to that story.
Hey, how y'all doing?
Hey,
we're sorry,
we
outdoors.
Background.
It's kind of loud here in New York.
Okay.
Yeah.
Understood. Okay, so 414, we'll come back to you later and revisit that, because I do have an update to that Department of Justice report that they weren't going to renew any contracts, because guess what? They just renewed one today. And I'll have that news and more for you later on the other side. Right now, we're going to go to our two guests today. And please help me out if I mispronounce any names. I'm down here in the South, so yeah. But anyway, Tanisha, I believe, and Fleem.
Flem.
Okay.
Yeah, F-L-E-M.
Okay. It looked like an I. That's why I need to, you know, fix my glasses. So sorry about that. Let me see if 561 is one of the scheduled guests. 561, who do we have?
Brother Scotty, how you doing today? No, it's me saying I'm just on the line.
Okay, Sin. We'll come back to the open forum, open lines, right after our interview. But thanks for calling in, bro. Tag is on the line. Tag, we still have you.
Yep. Peace.
Well, Tag, do us the favor
Tag, what's up?
Hey, do us the favor of introducing our guest.
Absolutely. Peace, everyone. We've got on the line Tanisha Michener. Is it pronounced Michener?
Michener, yeah.
Tanisha Michener, and we've got Glenn Luger. Is that?
Yeah, Glenn Luger,
no doubt. And they are two of those responsible for the film Calling All MCs, which was screened at the recent Hip Hop Film Festival, which I attended and covered for the Black Talk Media Project.
Right, in Hip Hop Film Festival NYC 2016. Again, it was 4 days of fresh. I understand, Tag, you could only attend two of those days, but you still got some freshness out those 2 days, and that was by one of our longtime friends of Black Talk Media Project and Black Talk Radio Network, and that's Cha Boogie, as we know her. She is her company, Revolutionary Films, is the ones who put on this first annual film festival. And from the news reports, as a event, it seems to have come off very successfully, even from a commercial standpoint. You know, that's showing that black media is indeed viable in New York City. So, what was the film about, calling all MCs? I mean, was it like a documentary calling out MCs, or something like a throwback to the self-destruction days when they were calling, you know what I'm saying? So, tell us what it was about.
Well, basically, it was a documentary short which documented three different acts of hip-hop and the evolution of hip-hop. So we had two female MCs that we featured. Slim was one of them. And then we had a group of three young men who were conscious and very young and very not atypical of what society wants to paint our young black men as. So we featured these artists in this documentary as an homage to hip-hop and the way it started and why it started.
And how... go ahead.
I'd like to add... It's also, you know, this is Glenn talking. It's important also as far as the female aspect, because in hip hop it seems like the female voice has been lost. So we really wanted to emphasize also the female acts that were in there, which is Glenn and Liquid. So, you know, it's missing, and I know everybody kind of, the way I feel, we need more women to, you know, more women voices heard, and young little girls or even women growing up today. I mean, we need to hear some positive messages and see women actually out there still doing it, whether it be, you know, hip hop or whatever it is they love.
Now, I'm a date myself. The last strong female voice in hip hop that I remember was MC Light.
Now,
somebody out there might say, but wait a minute, are we discounting Nicki Minaj? That may sound like a strange question coming from a conscious radio station, and, you know, we're all about the black consciousness, but are you of the mind, I'm speaking to both of you, are you of the mind that that is not a true representation of black women or black womanhood in hip-hop?
I would say that that is a caricature of an image that people want to perpetuate.
And this is Tanisha speaking?
This is Tanisha. Okay. I think that, you know, there's a place for Nicki Minaj, and that's great. Of course, she kicked down a lot of doors. You know, actually, she walked through the doors that a lot of female MCs kicked down for her. And for that reason, she can, you know, express her voice in the unique way that she does. I just feel that there needs to be more, you need to see the whole picture, you know, the whole aspect of what womanhood is, and it's not just this one-sided image.
This is Slim speaking. I agree, you know, peace to Nicki Minaj and love and everything. There's many aspects to a female, and everything is just not sex. And I noticed the media, I won't blame Nicki Minaj, but the media, you know, we seem to be buying into what's shown, you know, and little kids are impressionable. And, you know, it takes for us as adults, whether we're artists or not, even just at home, you know, your kids could be watching certain things, but you have to have the conversation with them. This is just, you know, consumerism and commercialism. It's not the only way to sell records or to, you know, be successful in life, music-wise.
Tag, I want to turn the mic over to you. Did you have any questions? And we want to hear about the experience from each of you, including you, Tag, your experience at this film festival, which I believe was the first annual hip-hop film festival, NYC 2016, associated with Revolutionary Films. But Tag, the mic is yours.
Yeah, absolutely. As you mentioned, was only able to get out there for 2 out of the 4 days. As it so happens, you know, besides the fact that the start of the festival, you know, was during the week, it also coincided with the beginnings of these actions that have been going on out at City Hall, what's being termed Abolition Square. You know, so just trying to, you know, stay up on as many of the different you know, events and actions that have been going on as I could. That said, as you also mentioned, I definitely tried to max out on the press you know, that I could be privy to in those last 2 days, and you know, there was plenty of it to go around. As to the question around female MCs, which is of course, you know, particularly pertinent to the film Calling All MCs, for which that was the focus. Directly after that, there was a screening of the film called The Lost Tribe of QB, focusing in on the history of the Queensbridge Housing Project with respect to hip-hop from the earliest days of Queensbridge hip-hop to the present. And, you know, it's great influence on hip-hop culture in general and music more specifically. And so toward that, I do recall during the Q&A, one of the members of the panel for the Q&A for the Lost Tribe TV was Roxanne Shanté, legendary MC Roxanne Shanté, as well as Dimples D, both well-known, celebrated female MCs. So, and they spoke of hip-hop being a full circle. And so to kind of reflect what you were saying about many aspects, there being many aspects, and the full circle of hip-hop needing to kind of, you know, go through its revolutions and return to kind of where it came from. So just what was that experience like for either of you or both of you, hearing those two early female MCs speak on the current state of things? Or, you know, was that your first time encountering them in person? And just generally, what did you make of that panel discussion?
Well, this is Tanisha speaking. Actually, sitting down in a closed forum with Roxanne Shanté, yes, that was our first encounter. And other than that, we saw her at the Jacob Javits Center a few years ago at the Soul Sister Conference. But it was a delight to see how generous she is with her spirit and the information that she gives that is just, you know, invaluable. And I think it's wonderful that she is so giving, and it's fitting that, you know, it would come back to Lord Shabba QB, and it would come back to Roxanne Shanté, and, you know, all the people that were on the panel, that it would come back to them, and, you know, have it be just coming back from the source, I guess is what I'm trying to say, the source that continues to put out, you know, that positivity and that change. But it was good to be in that atmosphere. Like, we felt honored. Well, I felt honored. I'm going to speak for myself.
Yeah, I mean, just to see Roxanne Shanté, the truth is, like, she is. I'm a...
And Dimples,
you know. Roxanne Shanté, I mean, her spirit, like, illuminated the room. She, like, her honesty, it wasn't no egotistical type of thing. It was just real genuine, motherly, sisterly, nurturing. It was wow. You know, I wasn't even too shy to even go and say anything to her, but I guarantee you the next time I see her, I will.
No doubt. Also, you mentioned these younger brothers. I believe they went by Revolutionary Reggie, Malik, and Two Wise, who kind of kicked off Calling All MCs, and definitely, you know, that those were important voices, you know, to see highlighted. You know, given, you know, all that you discussed around, you know, what kind of images, you know, are thrown out there with regard to individuals of their age bracket and whatnot. Now, have y'all kept in touch with them? And also, they talked about doing some performances, for example, at the Schomburg. Do they have a group name? Are they, you know, a hip hop group or collective? And have y'all kept track of their moves? Like, how can people find out what kind of work they're up to these days?
Well, Revolution, they actually all in the solo artists, but Revolutionary Reg and Malik, which is his name is Caduce, they're actually related. So mm-hmm. and they work together on music and things like that. But we could definitely find them at any given time. And last I heard, I mean, they're still in school. They're doing well.
I hear that Caduce is actually has become a teaching artist. You know, as he mentioned in the film, in foster care. So he's pretty much giving back in that respect, and, you know, doing his part in enlightening youth, you know, being that voice, I guess, that wasn't there for him. As far as Two Eyes, he was the youngest of the three, and, you know, he's still finding his way. And like Flim said, we can find, you know, we have our way to get in touch with them. As far as performance, they were speaking of a previous performance that they did at May Day at the Schomburg as Revolutionary Reg and Malik or Caduce.
No doubt. That's great to hear, especially around the teaching artist work. That's really what's up. Now, to get back more generally to the film, Calling All MCs, I noticed that it was perhaps funded or somehow done in conjunction with the Neon Arts program. I just wanted to get a little bit more background into that. Like, what was that process like? How did you kind of get in touch with or find out about that program to get the project off the ground?
Well, actually, it's strange. Yeah, it was kind of like it's really just like magical the way things kind of fell into place. So Neon Arts was a subdivision or a program that is run through Maisel's Documentary Center, and that's basically who we're affiliated with or who we've worked with. Neon Arts was a class for adults. You know, first-time filmmakers, second-time or whatever, but, you know, to help you tell your story through art, through film. And
it was a rainy day. We kind of just, like, stumbled upon it. And next thing you know, we the class already begun, and we had cameras in our hands. And we was like, whoa, what is it that we're going to do? And the topic of hip-hop came up. And it was kind of difficult working with different people and everything, because everybody has a story to tell about hip hop. Everybody has a different, a different element, a different idea. And then at the same time, when you're working with a lot of people, some people tend to, maybe not put as much effort into it. So we kind of just took the reins and just went with it for the love of hip hop, because we really love it, and it was really what we grew up on. It's really what geared, our mentality today, and we're hoping that it can do the same for the youth, with artists that are underground. What's not really underground, as Caduce mentioned in the film, you just got to find them, and they're out there.
And actually, Caduce was a part of that program as well, so it really was amazing the way the artists kind of fell into place as subjects for our film.
So we talk to all to all the filmmakers and all the MCs, all the female MCs,
and conscious MCs, anybody who has a voice, you got a platform, so, stand on it and speak loud.
Well, we need to take our first station identification a break, and then we will continue this conversation on the other side. We'll also want to open up the phone lines for anybody that has any questions or commentary on the topic of hip-hop and film. You can give us a call at 641-715-3660. The participant code is 549-032-POUND. Hit *6 and 1 to comment on air. You can also hit us up on the studio line. That's 704-951-5030. We'll be back on the other side. You're listening to Black Talk Radio News right here on the Black Talk Radio Network. New black media for the new millennium. Radio since 2008, providing new black media for the masses. And welcome back to BTR News. Again, my name is Scotty Reed, broadcasting from behind the enemy lines of USA Inc. The topic right now on this open lines that we're having on this Friday, August the 19th, is the Hip Hop Film Festival that just went down in NYC, New York City, of course, that Black Talk Media Project and Black Talk Radio Network was a media sponsor of. And so we have on the line with us our only college intern tag, who lives in attends school in the area, who was able to represent the Black Talk Media Project and cover this event. And so we're talking to Tag now and two of his guests that he invited to inform the listeners about this subject matter, which under the nine areas of people activity would, I guess, also intersect with entertainment as well as economics. But it sounds like there was some education also going on. And then when we talk about hip-hop and being able for artists to live, it intersects with labor. And so definitely hip-hop covers a number of the nine people activity areas as defined by counter-racist Neely Fuller. So, Tag, I want to turn it back over to you and let you continue your interview.
Appreciate that, Brother Scotty. And if I would, I would add to that the area of politics, which was definitely brought to bear in y'all's film, something that, you know, I immediately gravitated toward and is a lot of why I felt myself to reach out to y'all, you know, afterwards. I noticed that there were a lot of murals, you know, throughout the city that were featured. There was the Know Your Rights mural up in Harlem, different murals that speak to some of the issues that you all discussed and some of the issues raised in the music, that was represented in Calling All MCs. Now, someone who also is featured in the film, who's not on the line with us today, but peace to her, is Liquid, and she... from what I could gather from the film, she DJs and she also hosts a hip hop, like a weekly hip hop event uptown. Is that right?
Yeah, it's yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, she does open mic.
Open mics, no doubt. Yeah. And so toward the end of the film, one thing that she was discussing was, you know, this concept of hip hop and social responsibility, the question of, you know, to what degree, hip hop has a responsibility to society at large, the societies most affected by and that participate most, you know, in hip hop. And this is a conversation that's been happening, you know, on an ongoing basis, here on Black Talk Radio News. Brother Scotty has been interviewing one Brother Kwabena from off of the Clear the Airwaves project, a nationwide project, you know, determined to kind of eradicate what's termed as murder music, you know, from the public airwaves. So Liquid, she made a statement that I thought was compelling, and I just wanted y'all to respond to it, if you would.
that ours is perhaps the only culture that looks to our artists for our political direction, or something to that effect. Just paraphrasing. Yeah. I was wondering, you know, what y'all's thoughts were on that, if you could respond, please.
This is Tanisha. I agree with saying that it shouldn't be our only responsibility. However, as artists, it's always been our job to push the envelope, to open people's eyes, to kind of use our bodies or whatever our creativity is to kind of as a conduit to articulate and demonstrate what's going on in our community. So I think when used correctly, art is necessary in that respect. However, yes, it works in conjunction with politicians working along with us and the community getting together and, you know, making some changes. It shouldn't be that it's just, oh, let's look to the artist and let's blame the artist when, you know, somebody goes off the handle and does something violent. Let's blame the music. I think, yes, we do need to take some responsibility as human beings on this planet Earth and do our part.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, this is Slim. I feel we, in these times today, I feel like we kind of all we got, and we don't trust our politicians, you know, we may or we may not. We kind of do look to our artists, so I do agree with that, and I'm going to repeat what Tanisha said, it's true. You know, artists, we open the eyes of people, filmmakers, artists. There's sometimes things you may not see it a certain way, but in the artist, when they put it into a song, it's like, whoa, hold on, that is true, or that was me, and you, I'm sorry.
No, you're good, I'm sorry, and this is Tanisha, and yes, art is to open the eyes, but it doesn't necessarily mean that it's to solve the problem.
Exactly.
It's just to kind of say, hey, there's a problem here, let's work on it.
Yeah, let's wake up, you know, like, unplug for a minute. Look what she was going on around you, because, you know, everybody seems to be looking on their phones now. They don't even know what's going on around them, inside of them. You know, let's just wake up and, don't just be coddled by what's going on. You know, it's a facade, you know.
And let's get involved.
As a people, you know, let's just stop, you know, stop with the... When we're doing something as artists or as people, we just can't just go out there and, I'm sorry, it's kind of noisy over there, but we have to have demands. We have to come with demands. We just can't go out there and say, okay, this is what we're going to do. We have demands. If we don't get this, then this is what's going to happen. You know, you understand what I mean? So.
Definitely. And this echoes what I recall you saying, Flem, in the film, which is that, you know, even aside from on the mic or you know, from in the booth, that you deem yourself a voice of the people, a voice for the people. So, you know, whether one is, you know, interacting with their particular artistic medium, or, you know, just out, you know, walking around, just, you know, traveling one's neighborhood, you know, speaking toward those kinds of demands. I thought that was a very very crucial point.
I feel I was, I don't know, something in me. Like, I felt I was born that way. Like, oh no, not around me. You know, this would not happen with me here. Like, with me standing, with me, I will not be quiet. And, you know, so yeah, you know, I definitely stand up for what's wrong. You know, for what's right. Pardon me. I'll definitely speak up against what's wrong. But I'm definitely gonna, I'm gonna have your back. You know what I mean? We talk about it later, but I'm not gonna stand for anything, you know, that's violating anybody's rights, or even an adult taking advantage of a child in the street.
Greg, I have a question or two. My question is, why film? How did you get into film? When did you first pick up cameras? And that's a question to each of you. And then how did you come together and collaborate on this project?
This is Tanisha speaking. We came across, well, picking up cameras, or for me, film is has always been a part of my life. It's been what I escape to. It's been what I, you know, what I come to rely on as, you know, something to kind of give me a little bit of sanity. And when I see, not, I don't see myself represented in film, or I see the way that we are represented in film as black women, as people of color, as, you know, the quote-unquote minority, I realize that there's a bigger part that needs to be played here, because there's a whole element that is left out. So that's what kind of, you know, made me have this love-hate relationship with film. So being able to have the camera in hand was, you know, empowering in the sense that it's like, okay, we can shape our story. Let's go. Let's do this. And we started, as we said a little earlier, through Neon Arts. It was just a class that said, hey, come in, make a film, tell your story. And it was like, okay, perfect timing. Let's go. It's time to do it. And that's how it happened. We're actually on location now. That's why it's so noisy, trying to film something now, which we can't really talk about what it is, but yeah, we're working now. So, and the way that we collaborated is that, you know, me and Flynn been in each other's lives for God knows how many years. So, you know, and most of our projects we do work together. So here we are.
And as far as with me, I guess I'm falling in love with film in a way, you know, because it comes kind of hand in hand being an artist. You know, eventually I'm going to be in front of a camera doing a video. But yeah, I mean, if it's not sold on the mic, it's sold, you know, the lenses of a camera. So I mean, I'm learning to appreciate it. And even doing this film itself, even though it was about hip hop, I didn't even think to infuse myself in it, because, you know, I just didn't want to make it about me. But you know I had some people telling me, hey, you need to do this, you need to be a part of it. And you know, like I said, it's kind of woken up the sleeping giant inside of me, you know, to actually, yeah, you know what, this is what I was born to do. You know, get on that microphone, you know, use your platform, use your voice, and, you know, make it worth it, make it count, whatever you got to say.
The Black Talk Media Project was founded on a video. And it was a video.
Wow.
It was a video of Malcolm X giving a news media interview. And in this interview, he was talking about the power of the media over the masses. And he was talking about how the American news media can make certain countries be viewed as our allies or our friends, and then other countries as their enemies. And then right after, just by flipping a switch or flipping a script, then they can totally switch it around. And they did that mm-hmm. with the people who or the nations that participated in World War II. That's what he was talking about specifically. But then he had a quote that I memorized, and he said that media is the most powerful entity on the face of the planet. It controls mm-hmm. the minds of the masses. It can look make the innocent look guilty and the guilty look innocent. And that's
mm-hmm.
power.
I agree.
And that will be my question is what do you think about that statement, and have you seen its power manifest personally?
Absolutely. Just to finish with that, yeah, that is beyond truth. Unfortunately, yes, it manifested in a way that, I mean, just recently. Glenn, you want to talk about that?
Yeah, I just want to say, yeah, of course, the media will tell you, you know, will tell you exactly what to do, what to eat, what to buy, what to think, what to say. You know, if it's pumped enough in your mind, you will think that you're acting on your own accord, but you're not.
So there was just recently, you know, the flooding in New Orleans recently.
Right.
So, I mean, just showing, this is just an example of how it portrays us. So there's an image of, you know, white people, and it's saying, oh, this is the worst flood, and, you know, in history.
Right. Right.
And, you know, it's like, wow. But then they flip the script and show black people, and it's about we're looting for food. So, you know, it is really frustrating. That's why it's up to us to get behind the camera, get behind the radio, you know, get on the radio waves and do what we need to do and tell the truth.
And show it.
And show it, yeah. This we could go on and on forever about this, but yeah, I mean, to look at it on a positive note, just to realize that we have power, and, you know, and we have minds that, you know, were given to us by God, that we don't need to believe everything that's said to us. We have to question some things.
Well, I'm certainly proud of you, young women, and especially Cha Boogie. I've been knowing her for a couple of years now, as you know, she produces a radio program and podcast and whatnot, but had always been into the film, and so I know, you know, her morals compass as a person, and know she truly do care about the people. And
and
that this film festival was not going to be about a bunch of foolishness, but it was going to be a balance, a balanced event, you know. So, Tag, I want to turn it back over to you if you had any closing questions as we get ready to wrap up this segment.
Definitely.
I
appreciate that. To connect with the most recent comment, do y'all have any plans toward submitting anything for another film festival, let's say for the second annual hip-hop film festival, and or any other projects that y'all are working on that you can speak of, whether it be film projects, music projects, you know, community organizing projects, anything?
We have been very, very, very busy and also low-key at the same time. We have plans to continue to submit all MCs to other film festivals. In addition to that, as I said, we've got camera in hand, we're filming, we're working on other projects, which we can't disclose just yet. Also, as far as community efforts, we're putting together a women's conference sometime in October, where we are, you know, looking to find a way to heal, you know, women, and in particular women of color, because for whatever reason we're at the bottom of the totem pole and we need some healing. So we're trying to put together some workshops and some artists to come through and, you know, just have a day, or I don't know if it's going to be a day or weekend, where we just, you know, cater to that. Also, Slim is always working on her music, always, you know, popping up at open mics here and there, and
unfortunately, you know, I don't have, you know, anything to like, hey, go here, because I've just been, yeah, I'm like a pop-up MC, I guess, but I need to, you know, get with it, you know, get with the whole SoundCloud and everything like that. But, you know, Tag, we'll definitely keep in touch with you, and the minute that happens, you know, you'll be one of the first on our list to be informed of what's going on. We gotta go.
Yeah,
we want to keep going. I mean, I could spit a little something real quick before I go.
Oh, no, you're good. As I was stating, we was just about to conclude this interview, and I hope this won't be the last time that you join us.
Oh, absolutely.
Absolutely not. And speaking of... speaking of media, one last thing, please check us out at our new social media community, which we call it a safe online digital space for Black people, because that's what all our platforms that our organization builds is aimed towards, is just providing, you know, that free speech zone and that safe space, you know, for Black thought and speech. So just Google BTR community. If you visit our website, blacktalkradionetwork.com, you'll see black woman and Black man dancing. You'll see a little image, and they're celebrating and whatnot. Check us out there. And it was great speaking with you all.
Well, thank you so much. Okay. I want to add real quick. I should be in North Carolina right now. My family reunion is out there this weekend. But
so you a home girl then, huh? Okay.
Well, you know, I don't even know how many generations removed I am, but yes, my family is from North Carolina.
All right, great.
So this is like amazing, and I'm very happy to, you know, take part in your radio station. Thank you so much, Tag. And yes, now I'm gonna pass it over to Flynn so she can do what she does, and it's been a pleasure.
All right, thank you.
All right, well, let me just fit this real quick. It's something that I wrote. This is coming. Just let me just go. Pain is what I feel when I turn the TV on. Hear police bang, bang. Took another life, dang. You hear his mama crying. Things just don't change, but we gonna make it out. Got soul, they still trying to figure out. I mean, look at us go. Just because we in the ghetto doesn't mean we can't grow. And Trayvon, you listening? I miss you down here. Do me a four christening. Chilling with Yusuf Hawkins now. He was killed too by some racist men. A young you, you're rocking the go-to like you.
Woo! All right.
Yeah, I got it. Well, that was emotional right there. I got emotional right there. Yo. Ooh. You're rocking a go to. Ooh. Can't even. Ooh, I'm over here shaking right now. But yeah, it's pain. It's what I feel when I turn the TV on. Hear police. Bang. Bang. Yo. Guess who got shot in the dome piece by police? Ayanna Jones in the street. 7 years old. Flash grenade in the home. Grandma goes to the floor like, what the is going on? New say police raid gone wrong. And another killer cop goes, yep, home. But talk to me, God, will this end soon? And trying to stay strong. It's out in the world saying, it's going on. Policeman hawking, black bodies falling, yo. Check out the story yesterday when I was walking. Heard tire skid. Next thing, I'm on the wall pin. Backed on it like Jose from Dead President. Undercover, feeling my little breast up. Yo, the stop and frisk is messed up. I ask to see bad, they tell me, shut the pain. It's what I feel when I turn the TV on, hit police, bang, bang. Took another life, dang. Got a little emotional there. I couldn't even spit the whole thing, but that's where I'm at.
Hey, but I love what we got. That's okay, that's okay.
All right.
Well, again, it was great speaking to you two young black filmmakers, black women. And I really do, because this is the mission of our platform, is to get us to utilize media as a tool, because I really believe the evidence supports Malcolm X's comment that this is the most powerful weapon. This is how you control people's minds, is by planting ideals and suggestive behaviors and whatnot. So we got to become masters of that, and we, you know, unfortunately have lost a lot of black radio stations and you know, it seems like the black filmmakers though are making a comeback. You got Miss DuVernay, who has the film coming out the 13th at a New York City Film Festival coming up. And I'm excited about that. So I hope you two young ladies will stick with this, and we'll have you coming on here many more times to talk about your latest projects. So thank you both.
Yeah, thank you. We look forward to it. Thank you so much. God bless. Peace and blessings.
Peace. All right, Tag. All right. Okay. As we conclude that, so Tag, what? That was a great interview, by the way, so I appreciate you hooking up, you know, our guests with the network. So it sounds like it was a whole lot of interesting things going on there, that it wasn't just like the stereotypical hip-hop that we get from mainstream media, you know, black men with grills and fake Uzis and stuff like that. It sounds like it was a lot of social political themes that was occurring at the film festival. Again, we're talking about the Hip Hop Film Festival NYC 2016 that was put on by our partners, media partners in New York, Miss Sha Capers, also known as Sha Boogie of Revolutionary Media. So Tag, makes me Absolutely. Wish I could have attended.
Absolutely, there was you know, just a whole array of you know, of topics and of approaches represented, and you know, which is again, that's part of why I wasn't able to be present for, you know, for all of it, because it was just like, you know, so so full with content of different sorts, not only the screenings but also, you know, their various vendors you know, at the space. You know, there were Q&A sessions and you know, tutorial types of sessions. So the some of the video footage that I took was of a discussion by you know, directors and producers of web series of you know, celebrated and you know, well viewed web series such as Project Heat. Another being, I believe it's called Money and Violence. And, you know, these are series that I was not necessarily familiar with at the time, but they were providing very useful information about kind of the production end of, you know, essentially self-propelled content of, you know, starting up a web series from scratch without a budget, and, you know, the various the various efforts that go into that, including, you know, just kind of do-it-yourself types of tips, like how to get a well-lit shot, you know, without a budget. There, you know, one of the producers was talking about in the early days of their production, you know, just using iPhone flashlights, you know, just having everyone on the set, you know, turn on their phone flashlights, you know, just to get a shot, you know. So just that kind of you know, practical, you know, learned wisdom, you know, for filmmakers or budding filmmakers, and, you know, an emphasis on you know, owning one's own material, you know, that was very much emphasized during the discussion that I filmed, and ideally I could get some of that footage up, you know, for people to review.
Mm-hmm. I do want to take our station identification break, but I do have another question for you, Tag, before we let you go, if you have time to stick around to after the break.
Of course. Absolutely.
Okay, and I then will hit the phone lines, because you mentioned another event, you know, separate from the film festival that you attended the first 2 days, and you mentioned abolitionism, and that's the topic we were talking about from the beginning of the program. Some of the callers had raised the issue about what the Department of Justice said, and that they're not going to renew any more private prison contracts. And you know, he was saying how he was held in one of them, of Correction Corporation of America, I believe. And what was the significance of what the Department of Justice had to say? And it was a topic I talked about yesterday on this program. So, well, I'm always want to hear about abolitionism. So if you would tell us about this event that occurred up there, I think you call Abolitionist Square. So I will be back on the other side. Listeners, again, I'm going to hit the phone lines. The telephone number is, let me find the telephone number because I got a brain freeze right there, 641-715-3660. That's the conference line. Again, that's 641-715-3660. The participant code is 549032 pound. Hit star 6 and 1. Brother Sin in Florida, I'm definitely want to hear from you. 414, if you want to chime back in, hit star 6 1 as well. The studio line is also open. That's 704-951-5030. You're listening to Black Talk Radio News right here on Black Talk Radio Network, providing you with new black media for the new millennium. Talk Radio Network is made possible in part with help from the Black Talk Media Project, a North Carolina-based nonprofit engaged in the production and distribution of independent digital black media. Find out more by going to blacktalkradionetwork.com or blacktalkmediaproject.org and look for the menu tab, Crowdfunding Black Media. Black Talk Media Project, helping to provide you with new black media for the new millennium. You are tuned in to Black Talk Radio, new black media for the new millennium. And welcome back to Black Talk Radio News. Scotty Reed again is in on this broadcast from behind the enemy lines of USA Inc., where slavery was never abolished, and I'm just counting the days to October the 7th to check out the much-anticipated film that, again, will be debuting at the Film Festival, a New York Film Festival, in October, I believe, if not late August. But it'll be on Netflix. It'll debut on Netflix and theaters October the 7th. And the 13th, of course, refers to the 13th Amendment of the Constitution, U.S. Constitution, that is, that says that slavery is perfectly okay as long as you are doing it under the guise as punishment for crime. So let's go back to Tag. Tag, you said that you missed the first 2 days of the Hip Hop Film Festival because you was attending this other event, and what was going on there?
Well, so this has been going on for a couple of weeks now. I can't right now recall what the very first day was, but I recall trying to at least stop through there, you know, that first night. This was a couple to a few weeks ago, but what's being termed Abolition Square, which has now transitioned over from City Hall. It was a City Hall occupation, but now there's also you know, a court support element going on, which is, you know, not far from City Hall, over by the you know, by the courthouses. And essentially just a number of different groups from around the city who have been working around, you know, abolition, you know, and you know, all of the issues kind of that encompass that, you know, whether it be cop watching groups, or, you know, groups looking to abolish the NYPD, groups against current but soon to be former Commissioner Bratton, and, you know, various groups from around the city that have been doing, you know, work around these issues, headed up from what I can tell by the group Millions March, you know, just decided to occupy City Hall and City Hall Park. You know, it's a park right outside of City Hall, you know, right there, you know, in the heart, so to speak, of Lower Manhattan, you know, where you have all of these government buildings and whatnot, and you know, just making demands, as was mentioned earlier during the interview, making demands, you know, around the NYPD and around, you know, the budget thereof, and you know, just making calls for abolition.
That's great to hear, man, that abolition as a word or as a term is being used more widely now. At least that is my observation or my perspective from sitting here, you know, behind this mic, but also monitoring, you know, all of the communications as best I can going on all over the world. And I'm starting to see that term is being used more and more. What about you, Tag?
Absolutely. And that reminds me, I wanted to, you know, say congratulations and just congratulations to the abolitionists in general for this most recent victory around private prisons, which you mentioned before. But that's, you know, regardless of what that gets, you know, twisted into or what have you, just that in and of itself, you know, as you mentioned, just the acknowledgement, to me, it seems that would open up various avenues toward actual abolition.
We will hope, but the beast is tricky and always pulling sleight of hand. And I, you know, there's some criminality going on right now at the Federal Bureau of Prison. And so I'm come to you 414, but let me report this. You mentioned the victory, and not to sound like a pessimist or anything, but like I posted on BTR Community and Abolitionist Group that, you know, yes, this was a body blow. They lost up to, and again, we're talking about two of the major companies, up to 50% of their stock. They lost 50% of their stock price, to be exact. But apparently there's something called after hours where they have after hours trading. Now, the legalities of that, I don't know, because I don't really know that much about stock trading and how it's regulated. But I do pay attention to the reports that come out from these financial platforms online that deal with, you know, the stock market and whatnot. So they apparently, after hours, recovered 30%, up to 30% of their stock price. All right. But that still represents a 20% loss. Or I think it was the other way around, and the way I did the numbers was like, you know, they could have lost up to still a net loss of 30%, even if it wasn't as high as it was at certain points during that trading day. So that, I mean, that is a victory. A lot of people lost some money. Hopefully it put a few people out of business. You know, they had all their stock in there and then they lost it all. I hope that happened to quite a few people. Just on a statement of the Deputy Attorney General Sally Yates instructing officials to either decline or renew contracts for private prison operators or substantially reduce the contract scope. Now, I said yesterday that the next administration, whether it's Donald Trump, Hillary Clinton, whoever it becomes, you know, the CEO of USA Inc., they could simply appoint whoever or direct whoever is the U.S. Attorney General to renew these contracts and say, oh, no, that was the last administration. My administration will make use of these private prisons. And so there's nothing in law from Congress, like the 2015 Justice is Not for Sale Act outlawing private prisons. Then again, the problem still exists. Yeah, they suffered a body blow and probably a few of them got put out of the slavery business. But the principal players are still there, and they're saying, you know, coming out today saying that, well, we on our federal contracts, we only hold like 12%. I think that's what GEO Group said, and I think CCA only hold 15%. And most of their contracts are with the states or other nations. When you look at the GEO Group's contract with the nation of Australia, and you know who they locking up in Australia in the private prison, who they gonna be targeting, black people in Australia, whatever term or label they, or whatever they call themselves, the melanated people, the aboriginal people, the dark-skinned people, all right, they are the ones that's going to be targeted the most and, you know, suffer under slavery or suffer slavery in Australia. So, putting this in perspective, again, this is only a tiny, this is like we stabbed him one time, you know what I'm saying? But it wasn't a mortal wound. He's not going to bleed out or anything like that. But still, just the point that we was able to stab him, you know, and inflict a wound like that, you know, is cause to recognize that. And that came about through constant public pressure, things that are happening that we are not privy to, or conversations being had with people in power, with people part of USA Inc., negotiations going on, and so, because the people that's really in charge is trying to stay in charge. And when the masses start erupting and whatnot, we've seen it all throughout history, different revolutions in different nations, then the people in charge start making concessions. But they're a tricky lot, you know, they've been at it a long time, and so, you know, you always got to be on guard with that. But this is where the criminality comes in. Now, right after Deputy Attorney, first of all, it was illegal, the $1 billion contract that the Federal Bureau of Prisons, which is housed in the executive branch of USA Inc., which has President Barack Obama's name on it, that's on his desk, Mr. President, that branch of the government illegally gave that contract to Correction Corporation of America, because it's supposed to be an open bid process when we're talking about federal contracts. It's not supposed to be somebody makes the decision in the Bureau of Prisons, and so, the you know, we can definitely point at the person who's the head of the Bureau of Prisons, which his name escapes me. I could look him up right quick, but if I'm not mistaken, he is a black person, a melanated person. So here's a case of proxy racism. And so, but then this is what tripped me out. Now I'm trying to find it on BTR community. It's probably in the stream or on my profile stream. I posted it somewhere. But I read today, they were bragging about it. It came from one of the papers, Seeking Alpha, one of the publications that talk about the stock news and whatnot, talking about how strong their stock was today. I had to find it. Here it is. GEO Group stock soars after BOB contract renewal. And I was like, what? What's the date on this? The date on this is published August 19, 2016. I think that the lady, the deputy attorney, Miss Sally Yates or whatever her name is, just said, let me pull that back up. What's her name? Deputy Attorney General Sally Yates just instructed officials to decline. And they're not supposed to renew these contracts. That's what the whole press conference was about. And then the very next day, what do? They renew a contract for the GEO Group. So what's going on here? Do we got some rogue elements, some people that just ain't following instructions? Who's really in charge in the Obama administration? Who's really in charge? Who's really, you know, and why isn't there a prosecution of the person in the Brill prison who handed them the CCA, the illegal contract, and who then, to add insult to injury, thumbing the eye and saying in an act of insubordination, then renews the contract the very next day that the top law enforcement agency, the Department of Justice, but see, the Department of Justice, if I understand how the executive branch works, the DOJ don't have no sway over the BOP. Those are two entirely different agencies with their own departmental heads. So what is the DOJ, who can they be talking about? What, ICE? Maybe Immigration Customs and Enforcement, because I do believe they fall under the DOJ, but I could be wrong about that. I mean, this is how huge government is, just how many little alphabet agencies they have to target people and enforce slavery, racism, and white supremacy through various means. So 414, what are your thoughts on that, as we can get more in depth into, you know, you asked me the question about what did I think about her comment, but that's all the information that has come out in the past 48 hours, and that's how I feel about it, bro. It seems that, you know, laws are meant to be broken and nobody gets held accountable unless you are somebody like us, where, you know, they ain't got no problem making a slave of us.
Yeah, I agree, and I think that like, you know, I've been damaged already, like millions of other people. Like I said, I've been inside a private prison already, so for me to hear that now, it's like, you know, yeah, I'll be happy that don't nobody else go there, but like I said, I've been damaged already, and I think that we are so starved for justice that when they come out and be like, all right, well, you know, we're going to end the private prisons, we should have never been using them in the first place. So I didn't get happy about it at all. We used to have a governor by the name of Tommy Thompson. I think that's the one that started the contract with the outside prisons. And people were saying, other politicians were saying, hell, Tommy Thompson might as well just put a gate around the state of Wisconsin. You understand what I'm saying? And then fast forward to where we are now. So, you know, the private prisons, yeah, that's ended, but shit, excuse me, they still going to be putting people inside of their regular prisons. So until we stop being targeted, criminalized for just our behavior, how we look, I don't even want to hear it, man. Just keeping it real. Well, man, because my life has been affected already. I've been damaged. Nothing is going to change that. It's not like I can sue the United States for a conspiracy to bring all the crack cocaine in. It's just, you know, man, whatever. It's how I feel about it. Just keeping it totally honest, because I've been damaged by it already.
And that's why I say to the reparations community is that you need to reframe your conversation or demands on the USA Inc. for reparations for slavery, because slavery's still ongoing. We got a victim of it right here, just got through speaking to you. He's a victim of slavery. And so how can you call for reparations for slavery and for people who, what, died, what, 150, maybe 100 years ago? I don't know when the last enslaved person might have died. And you're just framing your demands around that when we got current victims of slavery. That's how I feel about that. But for Rob, yeah. just to I think I heard something that wasn't correct. They have not ended private prisons. I just got through stating to you that the day that they said, this is only the Department of Justice issuing this statement saying we're telling our people not to renew any of these private prison contracts, and we're going to wind them down.
Well, you said that they renewed one, right?
They renewed one this morning, today. That's going to go on. This contract is until 2020. It ain't up for another 4 years. They just signed it today, the day after this press conference. So you tell me one thing, but what you show me is what's real.
Yeah, so it just seemed like, you know, just a bunch of lip service, but, like, I was kind of speaking to that, saying that, you know, even if they, let's just say, nobody renewed the contracts right now, as long as the 13th Amendment is in place, we still being criminalized, so they're going to snatch you up and send you somewhere. Right. I don't know where, but you going.
Like you said.
Man, because it's about the money.
Right, like you said, it doesn't matter if it's the federal, private, but the states are the ones who are doing the most incarceration and practicing modern-day slavery. Look at, I bet you there are a bunch of those enslaved victims out there in California right now battling wildfires for $2 a day. Some of them have even died fighting, you know what I'm saying? And then for the attorney general, who is a black woman who's running for the U.S. Senate now, but she's the California Attorney General, Kamala Harris. I think that's her name. I know her last name's Harris, but her office argued in court that, hey, we can't reduce mass incarceration, as they call it. We can't reduce overcrowding on the plantation because that would deplete us of our slave labor. Now, obviously, they didn't use those words and terms. They use other, you know, words and terms, but at the end of the day, that's what we're really talking about.
Right. And then let me bring up this point, since you brought up Attorney General Loretta Lynch. Like, okay, Neely Fuller says as part of the code, you know, don't call out the other black people, you know, that's working with the system, you know, just try to do the most constructive thing. And, you know, I'm having a bit of a problem with that. You understand what I'm saying, man? Because if memory serves me correctly, it was a black person that was right next to Fred Hampton that gave out the floor plans, drugged his drink. You understand what I'm saying? Yeah. And those kind of things. So my question is, like, okay, if we not calling out the people that's working with the system, man, are we allowing for other black people to be hurt because we want to sit back and try to be constructive and all that? Like, yeah, I'm having a big problem with that. I just wanted to know your thoughts on it.
I don't think it's constructive to ignore any weapon that's pointed at you, or I don't think it's logical is the better term or word to use. It's not logical to ignore any type of weapon that's pointed at you to harm you, whether that's to kill you, whether that's to enslave you. Let's break it down in terms of military arms, okay? So one guy got an M16, the other guy got an AK-47. So, but I'm going to ignore the dude with the AK-47. I'm just going to focus on the dude with the M16 and try to dodge his bullets. But the dude with the AK-47, you know, I'm just not going to pay attention. I'm not even going to acknowledge that he exists. So, what, you know, is that logical?
Nah, I think you're going to get shot. You know, and I just, you know, I just wanted to put that out there, because, and the reason I asked the question is because right now, While the quote-unquote unrest is going on in Milwaukee, you have the elected officials who are, you know, being put out front. Mm-hmm. You understand what I'm saying? And, you know, I'm just tired, man. I'm just tired, man.
And I mean, it's tired. To, I mean, counter-racism.
And people at the bottom. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Now, I was just going to say, to further answer your question, though, but, you know, the whole point of counter-racism is supposed to be to eliminate confusion or lead to less confused people. Now, we know that they use racial showcasing, as Mr. Fuller uses that term, to confuse people, right? And so, you know, I know that they use them, proxy races, that's my term, they use them as a tool to harm us. All right, I at one time was a proxy racist too when I was in the United States military doing my job, and doing my job meant aiding racist white supremacists. So let's just speak honestly here. Let's speak honestly here. And so now, you know, I was really confused back then, and I was coming to some awakening back then, because I was reading Malcolm X's biography, and then I was starting to see how I was being used. Here, I'm being mistreated, and I was being mistreated and suffering racism in the military. So racism do exist in the military, so you can't run from racism nowhere. But I started being codified at that time from Malcolm X's teaching. And so, you know, there's no denying that I allowed myself to be a tool. Now, so I got to explain this to my children on why I don't want you to be a tool. So, you know what I'm saying? And so, they see Miss America, and I'm just making up a hypothetical. My children have not said this to me. They are not that confused.
Right, right.
But they got the current Black Miss America, who grew up as an army brat. Her parents were in the military, so she grew up traveling from base to base all over wherever the U.S. has bases, which is all over the planet. She wins Miss America, and I'm sure her being in the military, because she was then in the reserves, I think in the reserves, but she's a captain. She's an officer, a captain in the U.S. Army. And so now, you know, she, in her comments, is promoting what? Promoting us and our children to join the military. This is what Black womanhood looks like. It's a strong Black woman in that white supremacist uniform. And that leads to confusion. And if we can't explain to people how these people are tools, and then also I think it's kind of racist to suggest that Black people don't have free will, that whatever a white person tell us to do, we're just going to do it, and we don't have any choice.
What?
Because I've made choices. It's whether or not you're going to live with the consequences of those choices. And it's not enough for us willing to live with the consequences to make the sacrifices to bring the whole thing tumbling down. Gaddafi came close.
Right.
Gaddafi came close with what he was proposing and doing through the African United Currency backed by gold, but he didn't have enough of them Africans backing him. You know what I'm saying? It's just not enough of us. So, I mean, ignoring these people leads to confusion. Now, I can see where we're just name calling them that coon, that Uncle Tom.
No, I get that.
Yeah, I get that.
I get that part. I get that part of the codification, but I think amongst the people that's attempting to counter racism, we should at least be talking to each other about who not to let get, you know, close to us, or, you know, keep them at arm, you know, just keep them at bay, or, you know, however. But I think you got another caller still waiting, but I did come across another tidbit of information. Listening to mainstream radio, you know, Milwaukee is the topic of the conversation right now, and the caller called in and talked about how our district attorney, Mr. Chisholm, left a Black officer hanging by the last name of Glover, who was involved in a shooting. He killed somebody, and then Chisholm basically left him hanging. The police union didn't step up for him, and he ended up committing suicide. And I just wanted to, you know, put that out there.
Lots of stuff going on. I mean, you at ground zero for slave catching, man. So, I mean, my heart especially goes out to people in your situation up there. Tag is still on the line. Tag, You know, I didn't mean to leave you out of the conversation. Again, we're having open lines today. The conference line is 641-715-3660. The participant code is 549-0932 pound, hit star 6 and 1 if you want to comment. Tag, did you have any comments on what we've been discussing thus far?
Absolutely. Of course, what you brothers have been speaking of, you know, is accurate with regard to the very deceptive and constantly shifting nature of, you know, the system of slavery generally and those who practice it more specifically. So, yes, certainly we should have no illusions about that and should not, you know, get lost in any kind of, you know, seeming concession, because oftentimes that's how the state, you know, lulls the general public, the people, into a false sense of security, as we're well aware. And I'm also definitely hearing what y'all are saying with regard to proxy racism. You know, it's a critical conversation. I will be looking out for your work about that, you know, forthcoming, because, you know, it's a long standing narrative. Divide and conquer is, you know, unfortunately alive and well and has been practiced, you know, for millennia. So without question, to both of those issues. Just to kind of more concretely respond to your question about
Tag, I'm sorry, you sound kind of muffled, bro. Are you able to speak directly into the thing?
How does that sound? There's you know, some helicopter noises out here, which might be kind of affecting the signal. Does it sound better now?
Yes.
I'm outside.
Yes.
Okay. No doubt. Just to try and more concretely respond to your question about abolition and abolitionism, you know, as terms being used, you know, more widely, I definitely noticed that. And you know, it was through New Abolitionist Radio that I was, you know, exposed to that term to be used with regard to the, you know, contemporary situation, you know, in a carceral slavery context. And since then, without question, I've noticed, you know, leaps and bounds with regard to the circulation of that term. So, you know, I have to absolutely recognize y'all's efforts and those of others, you know, as you've mentioned, you know, Lee Woods and, you know, the prison slavery work, people like Dennis Childs, who wrote a work called Slaves of the State, which covers these issues, you know, and others. I'm sorry, I think, is it Barbara Espinoza who co-authored
Prison Slavery with Lee Wood,
right.
I believe, yeah.
Right. So, you know, all of y'all who have, you know, really made sure that narrative and the, you know, the accurate language to describe it, you know, has been out there. But, out at Abolition Square in, you know, I recall mentioning the community control efforts that are being made out here in New York right now, community control over the police. And just in discussing those efforts with people at Abolition Square over at City Hall, there was definitely there was a certain type of receptivity to those efforts, and specifically to the language around abolition, to the language around, you know, slave catchers, and to the language around, you know, the bounties involved with respect to you know, enslaving individuals in New York, and the kinds of you know, the kind of money associated with that, or the kinds of bounties associated with that.
Yeah, I think Max said New York has the highest tag on juveniles or children.
Right.
I think it's like 250,000, if not more, per child.
Yep. Approaching 300,000 per juvenile. So, I mean, these are these are astronomical numbers, and they, you know, they highlight the realities, you know, that we're faced with. And so, you know, again, to kind of just answer your question more concretely, the fact that people were willing and able to discuss these issues using those kinds of terms, recognizing, you know, the historical continuity from slave catching, you know, in an antebellum, you know, context up to today, was very illuminating in that respect. And more than anything else, at least there in that particular setting, people were more concerned about, you know, perhaps efforts around community control not dealing enough of a direct blow to the general system of slavery in the U.S. And you know, as was mentioned then, you know, there have to be many different approaches and many different weapons, you know, to the system of partial slavery, and no one weapon, no one avenue is going to, you know, completely abolish it, as we've seen over the centuries.
I want to correct something I said the other day, because, you know, we're supposed to be fluid. Going back to 414 question about Mr. Fuller, what he said about in terms of we shouldn't speak on other black people and what have you, but, you know, it's supposed to be about eliminating confusion. And I think, actually, I was thinking about this the other day, but first let me say this. When I was in the military, specifically of the type of job that I had, working with different radio equipment, each piece of equipment had a manual, and that manual was periodically updated. And so Mr. Fuller's work, the code book, is, you know what I'm saying, it's an invaluable piece or attempt at counter racism. But this was written 30 years ago. And we even in counter racist circles, they talk about the refinement of white supremacy, how these white supremacists constantly refining their codes and what have you, and refining just the system, and you know, they've incorporated the proxy races. I mean, there are just so many tools and weapons that they have used to enslave us and keep us in an oppressed state and what have you. And so, but, you know, that code book has to be updated to deal with new threats, new developments, new technologies. I mean, that's just looking at it from a military perspective. So, you know, if I wanted to teach my children, let's say my junior high school or even high school student, I would definitely give them that book, and then, you know, then ask them, you know, any questions. And then also, I mean, Mr. Fuller himself, I've heard say you're supposed to have your own code and develop your own code and what have you. So we can't have, you know, that's kind of contradictory to tell somebody not to look at racism and white supremacy or people that are participants in it, because we're all participants now, either as victims, either as resistors, the resistance, or either as the oppressor, you know, and we helping them. And so, to me, to just simplify things, let's just put everybody in the two camps, those who practice justice and those who practice non-justice. This is said, that's the simplest way to look at it that'll lead to less confusion, in my opinion, because the proxy racist is used to confuse us. So why let us confuse us? Why let them confuse us? But definitely, if we leave out pieces of the puzzle and you know, we're not going to talk about what the CEO signed into law or what his drone policy is because he's black, so that means we don't talk about the policy that got his name on it. You know what I'm saying? That's not logical. But no disrespect to anybody out there, but it's up to each individual to develop their code. We can't fall in love and romanticize our past leaders, and I do that myself. Malcolm X, Marcus Garvey, Mr. Martin Delaney, All right, the first black nationalist, the first black nationalist, you know, came out of right after the Civil War. And what, and you know, I do. And I look at their work. But also, Malcolm X showed me that you are also supposed to be in a constant state of refinement yourself, meaning that always learning and processing new information. Because his views when he first came out of prison and was part of the Nation of Islam, after he left the Nation of Islam and started his own religious organization and then the secular organization of the Organization for African American Unity, you know, which was non-secular, his views had changed. His views had changed considerably through new experiences, getting new information. So we have to always be in a constant state of refinement. If the enemy is always refining his tactics, then you always have to refine your counter tactics. We cannot romanticize things that were written 30, 40, 50 years ago. While some of the basics may still apply, you cannot apply certain things that might have worked back then and were viewed in the context of how the world was back then. You cannot always adapt them to the current situations. You know, this is the first time ever there's been a quote-unquote black CEO of USA Inc. But to lead, my personal code says to me that whenever I'm talking about politicians, I really shouldn't refer to their skin color or, you know, their nationality or anything. If I got them to talk about a color, if they're working for USA Inc., they're red, white, and blue. You know, red, white, and blue. I don't, you know, it's about justice and non-justice. So we should always be in a constant state of refining our personal code. Nobody can tell you, you know, how you should operate behind enemy lines, because different things don't always work for everybody. And so we have to adapt it to the situation that we're in. 414, you got dropped earlier. I'm going to just forget our last break. Coming up here in about 20 minutes, 19 minutes, Tando Radio Show. They'll have an open line, open forum show today. Of course, Dave going to share the news with you again. Do want to remind you about our new social media platform, BTR Community, providing a safe digital space for black people. And it is subscription-based as we look to fund ourselves and not look for funds from outside of ourselves. So 414, you got dropped. You have any other comments for us today?
Yeah, just to touch on what you was just speaking on about not relying on, tailoring the code to our own individual preference. That's why it's the independent compensatory. But what I wanted to add was something that Malcolm X said in this book, Blood Brothers, that they're going over, reading on the cows right now. And he was saying how he admired a quality that Cassius Clay, his name was Cassius at this time, that he had. And that quality was not to give away too much when he speaks. You know, he said that, you know, Muhammad Cassius Clay could not reveal all of himself in a conversation as he was talking to you, and Malcolm X lacked that quality. And I thought that was so interesting, you know, because I feel that I have that same problem myself as well. Just, you know, get a little charged up and, you know, just kind of let everything come out. And I think that in the refinement stage of white supremacy, man, that is bad. You understand what I'm saying? Because, you know, you have people that can be in a conversation with you, and they, you know, you might be like, yeah, you know, well, the white people are oppressing us, and, you know, things ain't fair on the job, and, you know, yada, yada, yada. And then you getting fired because the black person then went back to the supervisor or whoever and, you know, said talked about the conversation that y'all supposedly had in private. So I think that, you know, I think our independent code should be constantly refining itself as the system refines itself. And that's all I had.
All right, thank you. Most definitely. I mean, that's only logical. If your enemy has redeployed a new strategy or come up with new tactics or developed new weapons, then, you know, if you are the target of those weapons, then, you know, most opposing armies will study the weapons of their enemy so they can identify any weaknesses, any vulnerabilities, any way that we can turn this weapon that's meant for us back on them. You know, it's just a constant, I don't want to say chess match, because, you know, listening to the Tando radio show, they say, you know, the Chinese game of Go is more complex than, you know, than chess. Because, so, you know, it's always got to be in a constant state of refinement, man. I'm telling you. Like, for example, and then also I'll say this about a code. All right, a code means that, or a code book means that it's full of secret information. Now, like, when I first went in to the military, and part of my training was, is that, like, you'll see these guys in combat situations. I was not combat, or I didn't get attached to a combat unit, but I did have a combat communications MOS when I first went in. And so the little radios that you see on the dudes' backs and stuff when you watch these war movies on TV, and so those were called, like, Prick 77s, okay, FM radio communications. But we had, like, this other device that we could connect to that encrypted the communication, so you couldn't listen in on our communications. And this code, this encryption code, changed every day. You know what I'm saying? So we had to change the code you would have to change the code out in the radio every day, so the enemy don't have time to figure out your code, and because you're constantly changing it and whatnot. Now, the compensatory code book been out for 30 years. Do you not think that white people have access to this code and they all up in it and reading it, and so they know where you coming from? Now, a lot of them, because a lot of black people, the majority of black people, are not codified, and that book does not get widespread mainstream attention, it's probably flying under the radar of white supremacists, or they may not deem it a threat, really. But your code is not supposed to be open to everybody. You know what I'm saying? That's why it's important to develop your own personal code. I mean, like you were saying about sharing too much, I think sometimes we share too much. And I can be guilty of that too. But at the same time, in my job as a communicator, at my job as a propagandist, I have to make a personal connection with my audience, so that way, you know, I need to share personal stuff. But if I'm out here in the world and being codified and whatnot, you know, I'm not sharing all of that. Does any of that pertain, y'all? No. I may have gone off on a tangent, but you know, does any of that resonate or make sense or sound logical?
No, I think that makes perfect sense. I think that was a good point that you brought up about the encrypted code that changed daily. I saw that in a movie, and you know, if it's truly a war being waged on black people, then, you know, I don't think that in war times, I don't think no options are off the table as far as how you're going to protect yourself or defend yourself. So.
Right, like the Geneva Rules of Warfare. Their Geneva Rules of Warfare, I forgot what they were called beyond that, that says, has rules in there that you're not supposed to bomb residential areas or infrastructure like hospitals and schools and things of that nature. And so, you know, let's say you got USA Inc's Army, the United States Army, versus whatever nation that they've targeted that day. Well, you know, the other nation, number one, you know, let's just say China, because really the United States is not, I don't see them being invaded like that. You know, if they want to do something to us, it's going to have to be through nukes. But let's just say China was able to get its bombers over USA Inc. skies and drop bombs on Chicago and any other city, Los Angeles, whatever. Well, that's supposed to be against the rules of warfare, right? But when has the United States ever adhered to those rules? They doing it now. They doing it now in Yemen, wherever they're bombing. They bomb
Syria. I just
areas.
Saw something.
Yeah.
It came through my news feed on the internet. So it was just like they said, they just, man, did like 73 civilians or something like that over there with the airstrike.
So
how I don't know
you,
how true it is or whatever.
How are you going to win against the enemy following some rules that you're the only one following the rules?
Man, and you know, I think that and the divide, and like you said, spoke about the divide and conquer.
Now, I believe, like, that was Tag who used that.
Okay, yeah, well, I know I heard it in the midst of the conversation. I thought it was an excellent point. Me and my lady was just actually talking about that. Like, you have so many black people that have so many different opinions, right, about just our situation and how we look at it and what it means to us and, you know, whatever. So it's like, man, you know, well, how do we ever get past the divide and conquer? And it seems like the more blatant the white supremacists get with the oppression, more and more people are starting to wake up. But, you know, I don't know, you know.
Yeah, but I'm just want to just conclude by saying that on a battlefield, you can't ignore any enemy soldier based on his skin color. You just better be looking at whether or not he's shooting at you. And, you know, if he's trying to kill you, that's the only thing should be your concern. Your concern by his skin color. If I'm on the battlefield and we're in the trenches and I'm looking at the dudes over there in that trench and I'm on this side, in my trench with my soldiers, you know, my comrades or fellow troops and whatnot, and we're shooting at each other, I'm not looking to see which one's got afros and checking their melanation level. Only thing I'm seeing is that uniform, and I'm seeing the flash of that muzzle and hearing the bullets whizzing by me. All right, let's take this serious. This is a global war, man. They use black people against us. How can we not talk about that? Again, this is going to be in the book, and I'm hoping, you know, that I'll be able to have more time as BTR community grows and we get more resources and I can hire people so I can take time off to do things like write a book. But I'm going, I have this theory that, look, they say white people, I'm going to round it off, are only 10%. 10% of the world's population, right? Now,
yeah,
if we're going off of the compensatory code, it says that not every white person is a white supremacist, but you do have to be white to be a white supremacist. So that means you got the classifications, non-white, white, and white supremacists. So if all white people aren't white supremacists, let's just say half of that 10%. So that means 5% of the people in the world are white supremacists, and they dominating everybody else. Now, how is it possible for the 5% to dominate everybody else without help and participation from some of those outside groups, from the 95%?
You already know. I wanted to just thank you for the platform, and man, you guys over there are really doing the work. And you know, to be in this situation, you know, right now, not just the unrest, but, you know, I've been feeling the pressure from this city for a while now, and to be able to call and build with other brothers and sisters is phenomenal. So just thank you, and I'll mute my line.
Thank you for being part of the family. All right, as we get ready to wrap it up, we got Tando Radio Show coming up. He'll be on air from 6 to 8. That's 6 Eastern time till 8 o'clock p.m. Eastern time. But Tag, again, great interview, great guest. Really looking forward to hearing more from about their work, and hoping that, you know, they meet the success that they're looking for. They seem to be some very conscious young people about what's going on and how certain things work. But did you have any closing comments as we get ready to wrap up this broadcast of BTR News today?
No, just, you know, thank you, much appreciated to you, Brother Scotty, you know, to all of those who spoke today, you know, just appreciate it, looking to, you know, continue, you know, working with the project and, you know, trying to figure out the new community platform. And I would also just, you know, mention, as has been mentioned, that, you know, the nationwide prison strike is coming up next month. And I know, you know, all throughout the various states, there are different, you know, actions being planned, you know, in honor of, you know, that prison-led struggle and in conjunction with it. So, you know, just a heads up and a shout out to that.
Most definitely. And I think there is an ongoing strike right now in Texas, but what you're speaking of is the national strike that's planned. And, you know, it is the month of August, which means Black August. And Black August is just a recognition of the past victims who have resisted their victimization, and just a celebration of that Black resistance to racism and white supremacy. And Black August was born out of the resistance in the prison with the Soledad brothers and what have you. So I think, you know, it's poetic that these prison strikes occurred during the month of Black August, since Black people are the most impacted by modern day slavery on the planet. All right, so as we get ready to wrap up, again, want to thank our guests, want to thank our intern Tag for making that interview happen, and just kudos on the way that you conducted the interview. The callers who called in, I'm sorry I wasn't able to get to everybody. I know a couple of people dropped off, but thank you for attempting to share with us. Maybe you can catch us next week. All right, so recognize the fact that we live behind enemy lines here in USA Inc. We truly are in the belly of the beast, y'all. We deep behind the enemy lines, but the whole planet is a battlefield. And, you know, we're going to have to be masters of warfare. It's really what it boils down to. And war is waged in many different avenues. It's not always, waging war does not always mean I'm, you know, got a bomber plane and I'm dropping bombs and I'm literally killing you. But warfare is also waged through the media airwaves. They use propaganda to lie to people, to paint this false reality. And it's been used throughout the ages. They've never stopped using it. All right. So there are so many different aspects of warfare. And, you know, we need to be knowledgeable about them all. But, you know, only being realistic, one can only master one, two, or three of them. And then that's why we need to pull together, so the areas that I'm weak in, you could pull it up. Again, this is army. This army we talking about. Everybody got different skill sets. Everybody got different jobs in the war effort. And so, again, it's not always, you know, shooting at the enemy or dropping bombs on the enemy, but a lot of times it's waging the battles for the minds of the masses out there. And that is what we're primarily engaged in here through the Black Talk Media Project. And so I just appreciate everybody who has supported us throughout the years, and those new supporters who are becoming supporters by just becoming a part of our BTR community family. So stay tuned for Tando Radio Show. This is Scotty. I'm out. Y'all be safe over the weekend. You know, not to say that you shouldn't be safe all the time, but on the weekend, we know casualties tend to be a little bit higher because a lot of people are on downtime and consuming alcohol. So y'all just be careful out there. Peace and blessings to all.
Q&A queue is cleared.